welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zara Kopinski. Lucy Tan joins me on the podcast this week to discuss her novel, What We Were Promised. Entertainment Weekly called the novel a luminous family saga, and Library Journal said, a novel of class, culture, and expectations, readers who enjoyed works like Kevin Kwan's Crazy Rich Asians will likely find Tan's surprising and down-to-earth tale an entertaining read. I love speaking with Lucy Tan about this stunning debut novel, and I hope you enjoy our conversation. So Lucy Tan, welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm so happy to get to speak with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
So congratulations on the book. I really loved What We Were Promised, and I know it's getting rave reviews, so it's all very exciting.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, for people who haven't read it yet, could you tell us a little bit about the novel and what inspired you to write it?
Absolutely. So What We Were Promised is set in modern-day Shanghai. It's set in 2010, and it follows a Chinese-American family, the Zhen family, that have moved back to China after spending many years in the U.S. And two things kind of kick off the novel. One is that one character, Lena, who is a wealthy tai-tai, we call her. She's sort of like a housewife that does no housework at all. But they live in a fancy hotel building, and her bracelet goes missing from her room. And so two of the maids are accused of having taken it. So that's the first thing that happens. And the second thing that happens is their long-lost brother, her brother-in-law, finds his way home, and he had been presumed dead. So there is some link between the bracelet and the brother-in-law, which is a very kind of opaque way of giving a description of a story, but it's a story about class, and it's a story about family and where loyalties lie when it comes to your personal priorities and family ones and country allegiance as well. It's a very international story.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. And I think just getting, the story itself is so intriguing and the plot, but seeing it from all these different perspectives just adds a whole other layer, makes it so interesting. And I was curious what that was like in terms of the writing, because I would imagine it was probably a little bit hard to keep all of that straight and weave
yes,
it all together.
It
yeah,
was
how did that
quite
work?
A task. Well, so I didn't really decide to write from multiple perspectives. It was sort of there in the heart of the story from the beginning. It started as a short story that I wrote for my graduate fiction class. And it was from the point of view of Sunny, the housekeeper, who is suspected of having taken the bracelet. And she is servicing Lena, one of the other main characters' rooms, and that's how it opens. And what was intriguing to me was the difference in point of view between the two, because I think they both have certain perceptions of each other that are
yes,
incorrect. And that those misunderstandings were very interesting to me. So I wrote a chapter from her perspective, and then later on I wrote chapters from Lena's perspective, and that seemed to be sort of the spine of the story. And then I added one more perspective. So her husband, Wei, is another person who we get to hear the story from. And but, it was really difficult because I think the trouble with having three different perspectives is that each of those characters has to have their own personal kind of story arc within the larger story arc of the novel. So it's a braiding effect that I was going for. And oftentimes, I would, from a technical standpoint, keep everything straight in a software program called, what is it called now? Name is escaping me. But it basically gave you the option of typing straight into the interface and then moving chapters around at will. Mm-hmm. So I would be able to write different sections of their story and then think, okay, well, where in the timeline am I? And I could easily move things back and forth. So that's a little bit of how
yeah,
I managed it.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about how it sort of stemmed from Lena and Sunny having these different views of each other that aren't always correct, because that was one of the things that I thought was so interesting. Right from the start, there's that Sunny's talking about the tie ties, as they're called, and how she's saying that Lena is the worst kind of them, and she sort of stands there watching as Sunny does the dishes, and Sunny imagines that's because she thinks that Sunny's going to steal something, and then later you hear from Lena's point of view how she's feeling lonely, and she somehow imagines that watching Sunny work is going to stop her from being, I think she called herself slothful. I just thought that was so interesting to kind of climb into these characters' heads and almost view the same scenes, but from such different points of view.
Yeah, I realized that I didn't address the second part to your previous question, which was how did I come up with this story?
Yeah.
So I actually spent some time in China. I spent a lot of time in China, but I lived there for 2 years after I graduated college. And my parents lived in a hotel very similar to the one in the novel. And so I was there kind of, I felt like a fly in the wall at first because, you know, I didn't have a job there. I was still looking for work. And I was an American and an outsider in a very international expatriate community of residents that were serviced by local Chinese residents or people who came from other parts of China to work in Shanghai. So a lot of the people who were employed as housekeepers and drivers were people who, you know, were born and raised in China, didn't speak English. And then the people that were their employers were people who did speak other languages and who were from a wealthier background. So I just thought that dynamic was always really in my face and really interesting and complicated, and I couldn't really stop thinking about it. So I took a lot of notes when I was in China, and they stayed in my brain, and it became a novel in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm forgetting, what was the last question that you just asked me?
Well, this might kind of lead into something I was thinking. I had read in an interview just along the lines of how well you're able to sort of show those different characters' points of view in such a complex way. You had written that a sense of alienation can lead to observation. Could you share what you meant by that? Was that related to this experience or...?
It was a little bit. I think when I said that, I was talking about the experience of being in Shanghai in 2010, and I think just absorbing the world around me and about how that led to inspiration. But I think, you know, for me, I was, I'm Chinese American. I was born in the States, and I speak Chinese, but my Chinese isn't that good. It's fluent enough, but there are, you know, I'll come across nouns that I don't know how to, you know, say, or I don't understand what's being said to me. It's hard to have a prolonged conversation with someone who lives in China without it being obvious that I'm not from the area. So I think that made me definitely feel less willing to speak. And I think that when you're not speaking, you're listening more. And so, you know, writers are already observant people, but I think that made me hyper observant. And then of course, when it comes to feeling alienated, when you do feel alienated, you just, you know, everything around you feels different, and that's memorable. And you know, that helps you observe as well.
For sure. And just taking all of those details and, I would imagine that would be very helpful when it came time to write. It makes me think a little bit, something that struck me about Sunny, through a lot of the book, she's not quite feeling at home in Shanghai. She's moved there to work, and she sends money back to her family. And at one point, her driver, or not her driver, the family's driver sort of calls her out on this a little bit when she's saying, I don't have time for friends, and she's living all these roommates, and you're right, he says to her, "No time for friends, no time for fun. Let me tell you what happens to people like you. Either you get burned out and go back to where you came from, or you hang on here, miserable from day to day, thinking it's all for the greater good of the family. Can't last mm-hmm. like that." I thought that was so interesting, the way she's sort of hesitant to build a life for herself there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think Sunny is someone who, I think she's choosing the lesser of two evils. She doesn't really feel that she belongs at home mm-hmm. because of those family expectations. She doesn't, you know, feel that she should have to get married. She doesn't feel that she should have to live this very, you know, what she might think of as a cookie cutter life with a child. And, you know, she wants to go out and explore the world. Mm-hmm. At the same time, she's finding that life in the city, you know, is not everything that she wants, and she really does miss her family. So I think she's kind of wants to keep a foot in both worlds. Mm-hmm. And by doing so is preventing herself from fully seeing what life in Shanghai might be like if she committed to it. Mm-hmm. So I think she's a little scared and maybe running from the idea of making a commitment.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting, which I hadn't really thought about before, how she's sort of, Sunny is sort of so against her family's expectations for her, in particular around getting married, and Lena, on the other hand, sort of accepts that from the time she's a child down to even the person her parents have arranged for her to marry.
Right.
It's kind of an interesting dichotomy there. And I read you had talked in an interview about how that idea of between Sunny and Lena sort of having control over your destiny and where your life is going to go, how that is so different for the two of them. And you talked about that in terms of class and sort of there's this quote in the book where you write, because you mentioned how there is that whole thread in the story about a stolen bracelet, and Sunny thinks to herself about the bracelet, but a little more deeply, these objects of luxury they handled, how easy it was to fill them with meaning, to let them represent what you did or didn't have, how difficult, in fact, to know what you wanted in the first place. Could you talk about that a little bit, that idea of knowing what you want in the first place in terms of Sunny and Lena?
Yeah, well, I think that what's similar about the two women and why I thought it was interesting to tell their stories next to each other was that they're both women who are struggling with their individual values versus their community values. And mm-hmm. that gets even more confusing when your community then changes, right? Because in Lena's case, she was born in China and then she moved to America and now she's back, and China is totally different from how it was when she first left. And so her role in society, she's felt that change from someone who had to go from being a immigrant wife to someone who is now kind of a trophy wife. And I think that the point in the story where we begin is where she's starting to see, wait a minute, where am I in all of this? What do I actually feel? What do I want for my life?
Mm-hmm.
So what's luxury to her, I guess you could say, in the most direct sense, it's everything that she has around her. It's the ability to go shopping and go to lunch. But with regard to the bracelet specifically, it's this idea that she had a choice, and it's a choice that she no longer has. So that's on the one, that's Lena. And then with Sunny, she's someone who has lived in the countryside her whole life, and she's moved to one of the biggest cities in China. And so she's out of her home. And so those family expectations are still there, but they're not immediate. They're not in her, you know, in her face every day. Mm-hmm. And so she is slowly trying to find what her own values are apart from her family and her community's values.
That's so interesting. And it's interesting. Keep going.
Oh, I was just going to say that I think that she and the other housekeepers have this idea of what luxury means. And I think when she, you know, that is exemplified by the Zhen family. And then when she comes to be employed with them as by them as a nanny, or it's called an ayi, but it's kind of like a nanny. Mm-hmm. So she starts to work with them and she gets a really day-to-day upfront look at their lives. And she realizes this is not, you know, anything that I want for myself.
Right.
And that idea of luxury is a little bit changed for her.
Right. It's not as enviable when you're in there seeing the day-to-day secrets and resentments and mm-hmm. all the different things going on. It's interesting, too, with Lena. I think her character in particular, we learn so much from the flashbacks and I think the story would be very different if we only saw her in present day. And it got me thinking a lot about, I guess, sort of what we take for granted when we just look at somebody in a particular moment, because mm-hmm. her identity just shifts and shifts through, growing up in a rural community and then her time in the U.S. and then later on in this, as you were saying, when she's sort of a trophy wife. I just thought that constant shifting of her identity and perspective was really interesting. Is that something you were trying to explore too? That just seemed like she had so many different selves.
Yeah, and I think that is a skill set that immigrants have. It's this mm-hmm. ability to change with the time and with the place. And, Lena and her husband Wei are coming from a background where their parents survived the Cultural Revolution and they didn't grow up wealthy. And I think the overall mindset there in China at the time was, we're going to do what it takes to survive and to continue our family line, which, mm-hmm. you know, makes a lot of sense. But they have kind of vaulted so far beyond their beginnings that for the first time, I think it's not about survival. It's about what do we do with the gift of this life. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is a hard mental switch. And I think that she and her husband are both dealing with, well, now that we have this power, you know, what do we really want to choose for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a really big part of a person's identity. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, the people who like me, for example, I feel like I've grown up with the privilege of being able to choose my career and my education. And so in a way, my identity hasn't gone through that level of pressure, I would say.
Right. Well, and it brings up for them sort of what do they want to give their own child, and that seems to be a struggle for them in the book. Their daughter, Karen, I can't remember if they disagreed. I feel like it was Wei who wanted to send her to school in the U.S. Was that right?
Right. Right. Wei wanted mm-hmm. to, because in his mind, so America was always, you know, the promised land. That's what his parents had taught him, and that's what he and Lena sort of grew up believing. And but by the time that the novel opens in 2010, the world looks very different, and a lot of the opportunities economically are actually back in China, which is why mm-hmm. he finds himself back there working for an American company. But there's still that thought in his head, you know, we did all that work. We went over to America for a reason. And that reason was to raise a family there and to establish ourselves as Americans, in a sense. And mm-hmm. so he feels that it must be a waste if we don't have Karen educated in America, which I think is not a very thoughtful way of addressing the situation. And so, I think that the book is, it's also about, you know, these, the values that the previous generation had imparted with the best intentions, and trying to balance those against what the world actually looks like now. And so I think that is what the family is figuring out.
And I think that's such a universal theme, really, that idea of, you know, everyone sort of looks back on what their own parents and grandparents did, and you have to sort of take your life from there and figure out how also you're going to raise your children in similar ways and different ways. And yeah, I thought that was such an interesting thread in the book. So I'm curious, it is such a wonderful debut novel and just so beautifully written, and
Thank you.
A book I couldn't put down. And I'm curious, have you always wanted to be a writer? Have you been writing your whole life? What's your background?
I have. I don't think I spent my entire life thinking, well, this is what is going to be my main career. But I had always pictured myself writing in some capacity, and writing fiction specifically, because I grew up reading a lot of novels and my mom was a librarian. So I grew up around books. Yeah. And so I have always wanted to be a storyteller for sure. And whether I think I was just trying to decide which art form that would take. There was a time where I wanted to be an actress, and for a few years I did pursue that. This was kind of before I went to college, but when I was in college, I guess I just fell in love with writing, and I found myself, you know, more serious about it than anything that I'd ever been. And so I think I made that commitment to myself in college that I would do anything that I could to try to write a book.
And then was it, I know you got your MFA at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and that's where you started writing the novel, is that right?
That's right. So I started writing it in a fiction workshop, and that's where I turned in the short story that later became the novel. And I wrote the first draft while in the program, and the novel was sold shortly after I graduated. So Wisconsin really has been a strong creative home for me.
And you're back there, right? I saw that you got a fellowship. So
yes,
you're back,
which felt
year.
Incredibly lucky. Because the project that I'm working on now is set in Wisconsin, it's really just the perfect opportunity for me.
That was going to be my other question about what your next novel might be.
So I'm working on a draft, and, you know, knock on every piece of wood that it comes to fruition. But it's about three young women who grow up in Wisconsin wanting to be actresses, specifically theater actresses. But they, you know, it follows their young lives and their careers, and it's about friendships that they have with one another, and it's about ambition, and it's about the power of art, I hope. These sound like grand topics, and I have no idea if I'm able to address them in new or interesting ways, but it's what's occupying my mind right now. So I think, I hope that will be also what the book becomes.
Oh, I'm sure. I would definitely look forward to that. You mentioned being surrounded by books as a child, and I'm curious, as a writer and as a reader, have there been particular books and authors that have had a big influence on you?
There have been so many. I really, you know, it's all defined by periods in my life. I remember one of the first books that has just had a profound impact on me as a person. It's just the Harry Potter series. I mean, I'm part of the Harry Potter generation, and the ability that J.K. Rowling has to just create a totally immersive world, and one that I was so in love with. I, you know, even now when I read Harry Potter and I wake up and I remember it's fiction, I feel so sad. I feel such a visceral sadness.
I'm totally in the same boat.
And, you know, she's a magician. She really is. She's a true magician because mm-hmm. she's taken letters on a page and has created worlds for as a gift for every reader on earth. And that is, so I've always really looked up to her, and that level of immersive, that kind of immersive storytelling is something that I really admire.
For sure. And we were so lucky. I'm part of that same group. We were so lucky. I've said this, I'm a school librarian, and I've said this to students that, you know, we got such a cool experience because you'd read the book and then you had to wait a year for the
yes.
next one. So, and you grew up a little bit.
And you lined up at the bookstore at like 11:52. You're waiting for the store to sell the book at 12 a.m. and there's
yeah.
a party. And
there's something
really
so special about that. And as much as I love seeing kids now, you know, they'll fly through the first and then they might finish the whole series in a matter of months. And that's really, you know, incredible too. But there was something really special about having that pace of one a year over so many years. I thought
yes.
that was really special. But
right.
yeah, she's so inspiring for sure.
Really inspiring. And yeah, so there's something too about the grandness of that, the ambition of that series. I think ambition in writing is something that I'm really drawn to as well. So another favorite of mine that I read when I was little was John Steinbeck's East of Eden. And there's this little part in the beginning where he talks about having put everything into this one book. It's something, the quote isn't what I said, but that was the meaning. And,
yeah.
And I just thought it was, I really loved that, that intention to just put everything that you have into a work of fiction. And so that's another book that impacted me. As I became a more mature reader and writer, not that not that only immature writers like East of Eden, that would be
right.
a totally wrong thing to say. But, as I was exploring different types of fiction, I really was drawn to two writers in particular. One I actually got to work with, her name is Danielle Evans. She used to teach at the University of Wisconsin. She teaches at Johns Hopkins now, but she writes,
oh, wow.
Fiction from the point of view of just people who are very just vulnerable, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is maybe what attracts me to writing too, is just a sense of utter truth and vulnerability. There's no kind of screen book between the reader and the writer. And I love it when that happens because it feels as though I'm truly living the life of another person.
Mm-hmm. That
so,
is how your book is for sure, I have to say.
Well, thank you. That is the highest compliment I could receive.
It came through. I mean, there were so many times where I stopped and just had to read it again. And yeah, that completely comes through in your book too.
I love the idea of a book being a way for a person to live another person's life. I think
mm-hmm.
It's a really economical way of traveling
mm-hmm.
and of, you know, empathizing with another person, which is always good. And yeah, so anyway, so Danielle Evans, and I just love her prose. It's funny and it's tight and just very well done. And the other writer who is similarly interesting to me is Joanne Beard, who I think she's only actually written one novel, but she's mainly a nonfiction writer. She wrote a novel called In Zanesville. In Zanesville is just extremely voicey, and both of these books are about young women, and I wonder, or told from the point of view of young women, and I wonder if that's part of what is drawing me to them. But
mm-hmm.
I just think that her management of just word to word, sentence to sentence, delight from a word perspective, and just her management of tension and her understanding of the weirdness of people is just so on point. And so I also love her.
Those both sound great. I will definitely have to link to those in the show notes for people to check those out. And I was also curious because I share lots of book recommendations and I love hearing what authors are reading. Are there books that you've been reading lately that you would recommend?
Yeah. I just finished Asymmetry by Lisa Halliday, which
okay.
has gotten a lot of buzz. And it's, you know, the buzz is totally deserved. It is a really inventive novel. I really, you know, I think in a way it kind of questions the state of fiction. So I just think it's really different from the books that I've been reading so far this year, that it sticks out in my mind as one that is really wonderful.
That sounds great.
Two of the best books that have come out this year, I believe. Okay, so The Friend by Sigrun Nunez, as well as The Immortalists by Chloe Benjamin. Those both swept me off my feet.
I have The Immortalists on my list. It's
you're in
sitting right near me, and
you're going to fly through it, and you're going to want to read it again.
Okay, I have to move that one up on the list because I've been meaning to read it for a while.
Yeah, yeah. That one is an urgent read. there's a few books that I'm pretty excited about that are coming out this fall. One is called The Golden State by Lydia Kiesling. The other one is All You Can Ever Know by Nicole Chung. That one's a memoir, and that one has gotten so many amazing reviews. So I'm excited to read those two. And a couple works of Asian American fiction that have come out recently that have caught my eye. Well, I've read one of them is If You Leave Me by Crystal Hannah Kim. It is about the Korean War. I mean, it follows a few people throughout the Korean War, and it has strange similarities to my novel. It's a little bit of a darker, I call it the darker sister to What We Were Promised. but it is a tearjerker. It is an emotional roller coaster ride. So that is, if you enjoy heartbreaking books, that's one to pick up.
Yeah, that one I keep hearing about too, and it's got the most beautiful cover. I'm looking forward to reading that one a lot. That's on the list. I think I have my library hold in, but it might probably take a while.
I have so many book recommendations. I could keep going.
that's great.
Yeah, it's, sorry, just two more.
Yeah, no, I love this. I will link to all these.
Okay, wonderful. One of the best books I've read this summer is The Incendiaries by R.O. Kwan. It's slim. It is gorgeously written. It is about a young woman and a young man, and they get involved into a religious cult, and that's as much as I will say, because I think that alone is enough to intrigue you.
Yeah,
and
that sounds great.
Another one that I haven't read yet, but I'm looking forward to reading is A River of Stars by Vanessa Hua. It's been a really wonderful summer for Asian American literature. But yeah, that one is about, I think it takes place in California, and it's about a woman who is a Chinese immigrant who is pregnant with a baby. And so the plan is for her to give birth to the baby in the U.S. I think so that it can have citizenship, but it's a very timely, obviously, issue.
I love all of these. I will definitely, it's always so great to have more books to add to your list, so that's wonderful. Well, Lucy Tan, thanks so much for coming on and talking books with me and for sharing some more about your book. I just loved What We Were Promised so much, and I'm excited to recommend it and talk more about it with other readers. So thank
it
you
was
so much.
Such a pleasure. I really had a lot of fun.
I hope you head to your favorite local bookstore or library to pick up What We Were Promised. For more about Lucy Tan, you can visit her website, lucyrtan.com. And to stay up to date on bookish happenings, you can follow me on Twitter @abookishhome and visit the blog, abookishhome.com. If you're enjoying the podcast, make sure you subscribe so that you'll never miss an episode, and tell a friend or share the podcast on social media. And you can also rate and review in iTunes. That would be so helpful. Thank you for listening, and happy reading.